Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Ropadope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a random day once again on a Wednesday. My work schedule the last couple of weeks has just been a little, well, my work and life schedule, I guess you could say. Had to do a variety of stuff, so I had to tweak my schedule. Long story short, I'm here. We're going to talk some boxing. This is your host, Chris Carlson. I'm not sure if I said that. We got a variety of things to talk about. It won't be a three-hour show again today. I'm sure a lot of people are happy about that. Some people, I've gotten minor complaints about that. But, hey, you know what? What am I going to do? There might be some people calling in, maybe not. Kind of just spur of the moment trying to fit this in to my schedule this week. Obviously, we're coming off a busy fight weekend. Few really stood out. Obviously, Shields, for me, pretty much stood all the way out because of the meaning of the fight. We had Lomachenko return. We had a very controversial, to say the least, decision happen in Mexico. What is it? Monterrey, Mexico, I believe it was, for Munguia and Hogan. The PBC on FS1 card I covered. I'll give you a little detail when it comes to that. But, yeah, we'll start with recap. Then, of course, we're going to dive right into this weekend. Should be an interesting weekend. Terrence Crawford and Amir Khan fight on pay-per-view. And we also have Danny Garcia and Adrian Granados, which – low-key might be a pretty damn good fight. Might be kind of interesting. It's one of those fights where it's a stay-busy fight. Some people really don't think Granados has a chance, but if you follow Granados and some of the fights against Porter and Bronner, not only could he pull the upset, but his style lends itself, if he uses it anyway, lends itself to fighting Danny Garcia closely, because we know Danny Garcia has a problem cutting off the ring. So we'll see. We'll definitely preview and predict it. There is some news out there. Obviously, the biggest news out there right now is Big Baby Miller popping on a PED test. He failed a test for his fight coming up against Joshua. Now, they are in a wait and see mode right now, just because of, you know, the formalities of the test. They do have to check the B sample, I would assume, just to make sure that there wasn't any kind of false positive. But yeah, PEDs were found in Big Baby's system, and it's kind of crazy. I think it was, who was it? Was it Fight Hub or Fight Hype? I think it was Fight Hype that put out this video of a shot of Big Baby Miller right in front of the camera looking more diesel than normal, right? Looking all pumped up. And you don't really see his full – you don't see his eyes. You just see his face and his body. Pause. And he's just breathing into the camera. It's like an intimidation video. You know, basically saying he's ready. And now this news comes out. So there is a variety of news that we'll talk about, or just speculation, you know, when it comes to the sport of boxing. But if this is your first time listening to the Rope a Dope Radio podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. If Blog Talk's not your thing, you can find it at iTunes. You can subscribe and rate the show right there. Much appreciated. Player FM is another great source where we get a lot of listens from. TuneIn is another great source. Spreaker, Stitcher, basically anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can pretty much find the Rope a Dope Radio podcast. We're also, excuse me, part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. That's the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. That can be found on iTunes, on Spreaker, Stitcher, everywhere, including Spotify and on iHeartRadio. So you can tell Siri or Alexa using Spotify or TuneIn to find the Rope a Dope Radio podcast, whether it's straight up or through the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. You know, it's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between for the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. You can listen to the podcast right at the website. I forgot to mention that. You can also read articles. I do a weekly article for boxing there, a prediction article usually. Sometimes I get a little topical. I actually did a 2019 first quarter review a couple of weeks back if you want to check that out. And while you're at it, you can place a bet. It'll link you right to MyBookie. AG. Head on over to gruelingtruth.net. And then real quick, before we get into recap, let's talk a little bit about DirecTV Now. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you already did cut the cord, 2-in-1 deal here. Okay, so I straight up have a DirecTV Now deal for you, but then there is a layer of a deal. And I actually cut the cord back in August. It was just one of those things where I kept looking at my cable bill, and it's just like, I know I can find better things to do with this money per month. It just seemed like a waste of money in general. So I basically gave myself about 5 weeks to kind of try YouTube Cable, Hulu Plus, Sling, and I found DirecTV Now to be the best product. Here's the deal. You got a 7-day free trial. No annual contracts. You can stream it anywhere, your smart TV, your smartphone, your tablet. It's got the cloud DVR, and the plans start at $50 a month. And if you have the plan that's the plus or the max, remember, at $50 a month, HBO is included. So this is kind of a Game of Thrones, I guess you could say, boxing / NBA playoffs, because obviously for the NBA playoffs, you need TNT and ESPN. Sure, the finals will be on ABC. There are a couple of playoff games on ABC, but you need ESPN and TNT and also HBO to watch Game of Thrones and the NBA playoffs, just so you know. So that's the deal. Part one, starting at $50, HBO included for the plus and max packages. 7-day free trial if you want to check it out that way. No annual contract. Here's the extra layer now. So you can pray. Everybody can pray. You can prepay. There it is. You can prepay 4 months in advance for DirecTV Now. And DirecTV Now will throw in an Apple TV 4K fifth generation. Maybe you have an older Apple TV fourth or third generation. Maybe you're dealing with an old Roku. This is a good deal here, 4 months, so it's basically $200. The regular price for an Apple TV 4K is $179, okay, and that's $179. So you're almost paying the same thing, but you get 4 months, and 4 months puts you through the Game of Thrones. It puts you through the NBA playoffs as well. So check it out. That's four months of prepay, $50 a month. Yada, yada, yada. Oh, yeah, boxing fans, Showtime is only $11 on that special, too. And like I said, I bring up boxing because for ESPN, you need it. You know what I mean? If you want to watch FS1, you need it. Let's see. Let's start on Friday night. And, you know, I get the whole ESPN Plus thing. I think ESPN has done a good job in Top Rank, has done a good job featuring Lomachenko. He's gotten back-to-back years where, you know, he got that time slot right behind the Heisman. So they've done good by him. So I understand part of this deal, a large part of this deal, actually, for Top Rank and ESPN is ESPN Plus. So I get it. You put him on there, no big deal. Now, Friday night, there were no NBA games because the playoffs started on Saturday. So it would have been nice to sneak in there just in time. You know what I mean? But we had four cards this weekend, and it was nice that they got their own shine, I guess you could say, that night. But once again, it had a pretty late start. I mean, ESPN has done, since their deal, they've done this a handful of times where they've had a late start. Now, obviously, we'll get into the FS1 late start, which was really ridiculous, but Lomachenko, that card, you know, Barboza beat, you know, Alvarado. So that's not a whole lot to talk about. They did have 10,000 in attendance. Ultimately, we'll see if Eddie Hearn was right or not when we actually get the numbers, the gate numbers back, and see how many comps they had. But you never know. I always try to hold off my opinion until we get the facts, but if they were able to even sell 8,000 tickets and they have 1,500 comps or whatever, that'd be pretty damn good, but I'm not quite sure there. Gilberto Ramirez took on Tommy Carpentry. You know, Carpentry came in with a black eye. That's never a ringing endorsement. but, you know, you couldn't really give many rounds to Carpentry. Gilberto at 175 trying out the weight. He was digging to the body. I think after two rounds, it was like 16-1 to the body. He was just in control. He started to hurt Carpentry to the body and head. TKO, I don't think the fifth round? He didn't answer the fifth round bell. It was over. Not a whole lot to talk about. Speaking about talking about something, Lomachenko's robe was very Mayweather-esque. Although I didn't hear as many people shitting on him for the robe, but that was about the most exciting as far as two-way stuff when we're talking about exciting in a fight. Of course, the flurries that ended the fight were exciting, but once again, I do think because there wasn't much in the undercard, there was a long gap between the co-feature and the main event. That's happened a couple times now with Top Rank on this ESPN deal. Now, of course, you're going to have a little time, and they did talk Crawford and Khan, so it's good that they're having some sort of cool segment when that's next week. So I get that. I just think it was a little bit longer than it needed to be, and I don't know if we need a special on Anthony Crawla in this situation. But they had Amir Khan on, and not long ago, they had Terrence Crawford on. And once again, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the background sound, like the sound of the guy getting interviewed this week was Khan. It was really soft. And then sometimes they turn the volume up on that so you could hear that. But then the background noise of the live with Max at the live venue, it makes for like a uneventful interview. Not necessarily like a lot of things had to happen in that interview. I'm not saying that, but it was kind of like, I don't know, I can't really hear him that well. I think that they got to get that figured out. Sometimes all of a sudden, and maybe when it's a long-winded answer, all of a sudden you could hear one side of the source going mute, you know, and it was just Khan and that worked. But I think they got to figure that out. I don't know what it is, but I think it's because they're not in, you know, back in a studio, obviously, you know. Anyway, as far as the main event goes, Lomachenko, I mean, Anthony Crawla was never in this fight. Lomachenko came right out, went to the body. It was a really slow round. I think there was a body shot and a head shot with a hook. And that was about it as far as what landed. then the uppercuts and body shots started coming out, especially the uppercut. There was a nice late uppercut in the second round by Lomachenko. And by the third round, he was pumping his jab numerously, landing hard left hands, and he started opening up offensively with his angles, the left uppercuts, the hooks. There was a knockdown because of the ropes. Kind of looked like he sat there on his butt a little bit on the ropes. So the ref, I thought rightfully so, called it. Never did watch the replay, so maybe I'm wrong, but it looked like for a moment. Well, what am I saying? They did show the clip really quick. I never went and watched it live to make sure, but did it really matter? Not really. You know what I mean? Because two rounds later, or a round later, it was over. There was a body attack, a head attack, a right hook, ended the fight. You know what I mean? Lomachenko did call out Mikey. They didn't really, I don't know. When he mentions Teofimo, it's like they even have this clip of him saying he's nothing. He's nothing. And it's like, well, I mean, he's something. He is something. Now, sure, maybe he needs a belt or whatever. But they're talking about Mikey Garcia heavy in this fight. Anyway, kudos to Lomachenko. He had a guy in front of him that I thought he'd dominate. Everybody thought he'd dominate. I'll say this, though. I didn't think it'd be over in four rounds. I didn't think he'd knock him out in four rounds. So when you got a guy in front of you like this, you know, you destroy him. And that's what you did. Or you at least completely dominated him, even if you can't get the knockout. And obviously Lomachenko did. He dislocated his knuckle. It requires a cast, 6 weeks, no contact, but it sounds like he's going to be good to go. Now, it does seem like there was something wrong with his finger a little bit too. First we heard he thought maybe he had broke his finger. Then we heard about the dislocation, which did happen, but I think there was a lingering thing as well. But in the end, I don't think it really matters because of them saying he's going to be back in September. So they talked a lot about Mikey this week, just like Crawford, you know, with the Crawford fight coming up, they're talking a lot about Spence. So it makes sense. And I think that it does, it helps to put certain names in certain sentences, just like when Bob Arum talks about, I have to go all the way back to Muhammad Ali when judging Lomachenko, or, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard. He brings up Sugar Ray Leonard when he's talking about Terrence Crawford. That's promoting. That's, you know, put in the same sentence. It may not be realistic, but it is what it is. So I noticed he's been doing his best at that. The one thing I'll say, though, you know, he says he's willing to take or make the Mikey fight, but he doesn't really want to negotiate it. He just got to kind of take what he offers. And he called Mikey a mutt. He said a bunch of other stuff about him that doesn't really lend itself to negotiating. People that don't think Lomachenko and Garcia is a 50-50 fight as far as business, I'm not talking about what happens in the ring, but it's a 50-50 fight. Nobody's a B-side in that fight just because Mikey Garcia came off a loss where he didn't win a round. Maybe you give him one. You can't completely disintegrate his career now. Sure, does he need to get on the good foot and get a win or two? Sure. But when you say his stock is all the way dropped and he has to realize he's a clear B-side. And I do understand what Arum and others have said. You know, when you pay for a product, and part of that product, Mikey Garcia in this one, you don't feel like he was competitive or he tried hard enough. Some people don't think he was trying. I get it. I do understand what he's saying as far as a bad taste in your mouth and all that, but there's things before. I mean, that night, that the pay-per-view numbers and just having that many people in a stadium for a fight tells you something, okay? And then he was also in front of a large crowd at the Barclays, you know, something, higher than a $1 million gate at the Barclays, with Broner. Like, he's been in front of large audiences, and he is not the B-side to Lomachenko. I'm not talking about who would win the fight, but if you think Lomachenko is this clearing away A-side compared to Mikey Garcia, you're nuts. And if that's how Bob wants to make the offer, then the fight won't happen. I think he would need a fight anyway just to get on the good foot. You know what I mean? Mikey Garcia. I don't think he'd go right into this fight. But to be honest with you, Lomachenko's next move, you have Richard Comey. You have guys like Luke Campbell and Teofimo Lopez, obviously. And Campbell and even Devin Haney is in the mix to an extent anyway. I don't think he'd actually fight him right now, but he's in the mix. And it really matters what Mikey Garcia does with this WBC belt at 135. There's been rumors that Teofimo Lopez and Luke Campbell would fight for that belt. There's been rumors that they're just going to give the belt to him in an interim status maybe. There's been all sorts of rumors. So we really don't know who's next exactly. It does sound like next year, though, they're building for Teofimo Lopez. That's what it sounds like. So, like I said, you know, it wasn't a fight that was going to overly excite you. But then again, he took care of business. He looked pretty damn good. And to be honest with you, in front of a million plus people, it would have been nice for people to see that knockout, if we're being honest. You know what I mean? So it kind of sucked that way, but I understand at least it's this level of opponent on ESPN Plus. And they're not putting a more important, more difficult opponent on ESPN Plus. They've been putting those on ESPN. So we'll see, though, in the future where you know, his difficult fights remain. It's funny because he also doesn't really mention Gervonta. Not that – I shouldn't say that because Gervonta's side, the Mayweather, they don't want the fight right now. They just don't. I don't think at this point they want it. And but he says that the Teofimo Lopez fight is bigger than Gervonta Davis. And I don't really agree with that. Gervonta actually is a growing name for sure. But we'll see. We'll see. But I can understand. I do think the way Lomachenko's PR team and him himself talk about Gervonta, it's pretty funny. Talking about how, you know, he's the best fighter on Twitter and stuff like that. It is pretty funny. So I think they're doing a good job there with that. We'll see. So he took care of business. It was a wrap. I guess the only complaint would be, beyond some people complain that Lomachenko was on ESPN Plus, but it's part of this deal, like it or not. But the late start, it was kind of a later start to an extent, especially for the East Coast people. Not as late as some of their other top-ranked cards have been, though. There's been later ones, so we can't sit there and claim that it was that late. And it wasn't as late, like I said, as some of their other cards in the past. And it wasn't as late as the Fox Sports one either. So it is what it is. Now, as far as Saturday goes, we'll talk Showbox, we'll talk DAZN, and we'll talk FS1. We'll start with the most important fight, Shields and Hammer. Now, this did suck. You know, three cards spread out amongst basically all hardcore fans. There wasn't going to be. Now, Clarissa Shields has some casual fans that involved with her, but basically between three cards, you're going to have a bunch of hardcores watching, and like it always does, it affects the rating of every one of them, every single one of them. Now, Fox Sports, they had something to do with the fact that their main event started so late too. That hurt their rating, but it always takes a chunk off the ratings, and it's just hard to stand out. But I think Clarissa Shields, out of everyone besides Hogan, because nobody thought he had a chance in that fight. But as far as important fight, Shields and Hammer obviously was it. Shields coming in undefeated with less than 10 fights, I think. Hammer was, what, 25-0, 26-0, 24-0, something like that. Some people gave her the first round. She was kind of bringing some pressure at her own comfortable range. I thought the counter right hands and the good defense and late left hooks actually won the round for Shields. But if you're going to give her a round, I guess that would be the round to give her. But other than that, it was a wrap, dude. I mean, the jab was so crisp. The upper body defense from Shields and the counter shots, mostly with the right hook, was a thing of beauty. She had it going on. And I understand that some people, you know, I saw some people on Twitter saying, oh, just seeing highlights of it make me don't even want to watch this fight. There's no coordination, no speed, you know, just sloppy in it. To be honest with you, sure, during flurries and stuff like that, I mean, men get sloppy too, obviously. But, you know, there was a bit of infighting. Whether it was, you know, Hammer, I should say, definitely was holding a lot. And Shields was doing the right thing. She wasn't overly complaining to the ref. She was just going to the body when she'd be held. And that would create some sort of break. You know what I mean? So there was a lot of infighting. It professional fights in me. And like I said, Shields with those hard right hands, tripling up the jab sometimes, the left hooks. You know, after like the fifth or sixth round, it was like 21-1 on body shots. I think overall it was 31-3. She just dominated. Now the sixth round was a little bit, closer of a round, but both of them kind of missed in that round. But honestly, you could see in spots as this, fight wore on that Hammer was hurt. She spit her mouthpiece where it got knocked out, and then she spit it one or the other. Shields just dominated it. She looked as sharp as I've seen her as a professional fighter. And when she fights this way, fully focused, fully engaged, fully on the game plan, not just trying to knock somebody out, she's going to be a handful. All three judges saw it, 98-92. Shields technically kicked her ass. Is what happened. Technically speaking, she broke Hammer down and kicked her ass. 112-49 was the punch count, 29% to 13. Power shots, 94-24. Shields, phenomenal. There's really no other way to put it. Now, I'm not going to go over those heavyweight fights. The second one was a tad better than the first one, but neither of them were that good. It felt like the favorites should have just fought each other. You know, that would have been a better deal, I think. But Shields looked great. And the rating didn't peak as high as the rating last year. But to be honest with you, that's what happens when you have three cards going head-to-head, you know? So I don't really blame her. It just, that's the state of boxing. We have so much boxing on now that whether it's quality or quantity, it kind of turns into filler at some point, unfortunately. But kudos to her, and she, in a short amount of time, she's accomplished a lot, and she's a really good fighter. It'll be really interesting to see who else she can fight within a year or something like that. What else big fight could she land? Obviously, depth is going to be an issue down the line, but Shields looked great, man. Shields looked great. And the crowd was into it. Good for her. Very good for her. She looked the best against the best competition right there. Now from Monterrey, Mexico, on DAZN, Jaime Munguia took on Dennis Hogan. Nice crowd there. This was a surprise. This is a surprise. This is one of those fights and outcomes that, well, not just outcome, but the actual fight that kind of makes you think to yourself, that's right, I'm not a professional matchmaker. Now, you know, a lot of people will blame Munguia's weight, you know, having to shrink down to 154. That could be. That definitely could be. That could be an issue, although when he gets to 160, you know, maybe he'll be that much healthier and stronger and feel better, and maybe the last couple of weeks of camp he can still go hard and not feel like he's drained or whatever, and maybe he's going to be a different fighter. I don't know. But also he could lack the power, you know, at that weight. I mean, he gets hit a lot, Munguia does. And I think a lot of people are kind of just living up to that or looking at that Saddam Ali fight and trying to make a bunch of judgments off it or something like that. And I don't know. We'll see. Some people, you know, some people say he just didn't take him serious. That could have happened, although he didn't look – well, he's not going to look chubby making that weight. I don't know. I'll say this. The ring announcer sounded like he just woke up from a nap. I mean, that was some quiet stuff. I don't know if people remember that part. But anyway, getting into this fight, Dennis Hogan won this fight. Not to say that I could watch it again and see a 7-5 fight or a draw for Munguia. I was going to say a 7-5 or a draw. I'm not saying that that's not possible. There was some swing rounds. The opening round was a slow round. Could have been a swing round because not much happened. Beyond that first round, though, I gave Hogan the second, third, and fourth. You know, you had Munguia not doing much. A few body shots, a jab. But other than that, it was really good movement. Left hands, several of them, whether it's a left hook or straight left hand, but especially the left hook. Like I said, this fight took a little while to get going. And once it did, though, it was pretty entertaining. If you look at the fourth round, overhand rights and left hooks, and the defense from Hogan, too, he definitely flashed that. I finally thought around the fifth round is when Munguia started on a little bit of a run. I gave him the fifth and sixth. I thought he was, you know, the busier of the two. He started landing some shots. He started landing some sweeping right hands and left hooks to the body and head. He was just busier, you know. So I gave him the fifth, sixth, and the eighth. Uppercuts and hooks started to really find their home in that one. Although the eighth round was close because Hogan did make a rally and landed some late shots. I gave Hogan the seventh, though. The left hooks, the jab. He also had this, like, leaping or this lead looping right hand. And whereas Munguia was missing a whole bunch of shots at that point. But then I thought Hogan won the ninth and tenth. He was winging his hooks and crosses. Then, you know, at times he was coming forward in little spurts. At other times he was on the back foot. So he went from, like, retrieve to a retreat to attack mode. It was kind of messing with Munguia. And by the eighth and ninth, there were moments, like large chunks of time, where Munguia looked tired, looked faded. Then he'd bounce back and rally and whatnot, but it took a while. In the 10th round, pot shots and uppercuts, jab, pivot, some two-way stuff down the stretch of that 10th, but Hogan was dominating that one. I did give the 12th to the more aggressive Munguia. The 11th, actually gave to Hogan as well. Overhand right, stumbled Munguia. That's right. That was the round that happened. I was thinking the 12th for some reason. And then he hit him with some good body shots and head shots later. Good exchanges as well. Like I said, I gave Munguia the last round. I had a 7-5 for Hogan. Like I said, maybe 6-6, maybe 7-5 for Munguia, but I saw it 7-5 straight up. The judges read it 114-114, a draw. And then one judge had it 116-112. Can you find eight rounds for Munguia in there? You know, like I said, 115-113 his way, that's not the end of the world. I get it. But I just, eight rounds is a whole lot to find for Munguia. I didn't see it, man. I did not see it. It was disappointing that at least one of the cards didn't go to Hogan. But, you know, that's what it is. What it is. It is what it is. 122 Mungia to 123. That's not a lot of punches landed for a come forward fighter. Throwing 671 compared to 497, 24% to 18%. But yeah, I had Hogan winning 7-5. Took a little while, like I mentioned, but it actually got good. It actually turned into a pretty good fight, I thought. It was pretty interesting, but yeah, I thought that Hogan got screwed. I thought he got hosed, but I also didn't think he won 9-3 or something like that, and that's probably, you know, what you have to win by to get, you know, a fair shake. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, but that tends to be true. You know what I mean? That tends to be true. Let's see here. I think that about wraps it up for that card anyway. And DAZN, just going to talk about that fight. So we'll see where Mungia goes from here. What is he, 33-0 or 34-0 now? He's a young kid. He's only 22 years old, but he's just really limited. And to move him to 160, I just think you're going to have to move him against mediocre to average guys for a while and then try to cash him out. But who knows? Maybe he goes to middleweight and he just has that youthful energy, that aggression that we see and people like about him. And they see the potential of this guy to be an all-action guy, but I don't know, man. We'll see. We'll see where he goes from here. Definitely see where he goes from here. Now, on to the PBC on FS1 card that was very, you know, anticlimactic, obviously. You know, the climax of the main event came really, really late. And, well, when I say climax, the climax was, you know, irrelevant. There was two rounds and the fight was over off of a cut, unfortunately, as far as the main event goes. Now, you know, when it comes to this card, here's where they went wrong, and it's pretty obvious. You know, Joey Spencer should have been either a walkout bout at the end of it, which they're not afraid to do on other events. We see it all the time. Or while they're waiting for the main, while they're waiting for the baseball game to be done on FS1, they had time to put on that Spencer fight. And, you know, how many times have we seen, you know, a show go to the broadcasters, right? And you can see people in the ring fighting behind them. You know, even if they came where Joey had already been in the ring for three or four rounds and they did their little intro and they say, let's jump in on Joey Spencer's fight for the last round or two, that type of thing. You know what I mean? Whatever the case may be, when it's already been delayed 40 minutes or 50 minutes, whatever it was, you probably shouldn't have the triple header at that point. Or you can have it just after. If something's going to like start at midnight my time, which obviously is 1 o'clock Eastern time. So you're literally going to be walking out of that venue around 1 o'clock, a little bit later than 1 o'clock. And so you're done watching a fight at 2 a.m. on the East Coast. I just think that to get a triple header in, if the card would have started right at the 9 o'clock, if that baseball game did not go late, that'd be different. That'd be different. But it did go late. It went considerably late. So when you have a good fight, I'm going to talk about some of the fights here. Derebyshenko and Cloquet turned out to be a really good fight. Cloquet hurt him down the stretch and everything. But when you go from that fight, that had the crowd's attention, that really was a good fight. And it actually, many people that were watching the Shields fight, when that was over, you were able to still watch the Munguia fight or this fight. And it would have been just nice to go right into the main event at that point, obviously. Right? Obviously. And they dropped the ball. They dropped the ball. And, you know, you're already going to hurt your rating, like I said, when there's three different boxing events going on. And a good chunk of it were head-to-head. Now, this upcoming weekend we have that. But it is, there are times where one card can start an hour or two before the other. And then it feels more like, well, I got to watch boxing for five straight hours. That's a little different. But when it's head-to-head, a lot of these fights are head-to-head, it makes it tough. So it's really disappointing that the Truax and Quillen fight went that way. And obviously, it's not like that was the fight that everybody tuned into this weekend. You know, it's not about that. It's about they had everybody in the venue. You know, they had over 4,000 people in the building. Everybody was excited to see their local guy. This was a good spot for Quillen, the minor favorite in this one. Truax came out to Purple Rain. The crowd was singing. It was all set up, and then all of a sudden, there's an accidental headbutt, and the fight's over. And, you know, the thing is, there's a lot of casual fans that come to watch local fighters, especially Jamal James and Truax. And some of them actually thought that Truax had lost. So people were booing because they want to see the fight still. But they also thought that the ref was pulling the plug on the fight, and that meant Truax lost. Even Quillen, I believe, in the interview said, you know, I don't really take this as a win. It's not really a good, legit win. It's like, well, it's not a win, dude. It's a no contest. So, you know, it was anticlimactic, clearly. But the way that they should have just thrown the Spencer fight out either before on FS2 or after. They should have just made it a doubleheader live and just went with it. And this has also been explained to me about this. And when people say, oh, the, you know, Lomachenko was on ESPN Plus and it kills the exposure. And it does to an extent. For sure it does. Crawford Horn, that I would have liked to see that on regular ESPN. At least with Corolla, it's a no-win opponent, so it really doesn't matter, I guess. But, you know, a lot, you know, people have complained about late starts for ESPN because, like I said, they've done a lot more of these. And I get it. I totally get it. But I really think that just has to do with the network itself. And at those times of night, first of all, the regular programming, a lot of the regular programming wouldn't be getting the rating it would get that it's currently getting when they have that on. Even the FS1, which didn't do a great rating by any stretch, it did a poor rating. It did their lowest one. But still, what they have planned is all replays at that time of night. So if they can extend it an extra hour and collect ad revenue, that's all they give a shit about, just like ESPN Plus and adding subs. That's really, in the end, all they give a shit about. And it's content. Right now, it's content. Content is king, whether it's quality or not. A lot of it's filler, but the quality and quantity question is a good one right now. And like I said, these networks are just like, screw it, man. We want content. Like I said, on FS1 at 12 o'clock at night, it's going to be a replay of something, and there's no way it's going to get the current thing, even though it's the lowest rating thing that they've done so far this year for FS1, it's still double, triple, quadruple, sometimes more, five, six times more than, you know, ratings-wise than what would be on there. And that's all these networks give a shit about. So right now, it's the battle for content. And sometimes, a lot of times it seems, you know, a sport like boxing is thriving from it, and it helps it in some ways. In other ways, it hurts it. It becomes filler, and we have three fights going on at the same time, basically, events. Anyway, that's my little rant, yada, yada, yada. As far as the undercard off TV stuff, you know, this Lara, who's a local fighter, fights out of same gym that Truax fights out of, and Darwin Price actually knocked out a guy in the sixth round, Luis Flores. A local fighter, Minneapolis, got a gift decision, or at least a favorable decision. It was a very questionable decision against Alex Gaetan, and that actually got to be an interesting fight. That was one that they put on as a swing fight waiting for that MLB game to finish. Money Paul came back and got another knockout, and he's really trying to get a Pizza Hut sponsorship. I'm not hating on him. I'm not hating on him. Chris Colbert, a.k.a. Little B-Hop, looked pretty damn good. Looked really damn good. Keep an eye on him. He's a pretty damn good fighter, I think. Like I said, Joey Spencer, he went for the big shots early, and when it didn't happen, he got tired, he got a little winded, he got hit. And it'll be interesting to see Spencer bounce back from this and see what he's got. But the Cole K fight, that was a good fight. Now, it took a little while for this thing to start popping off. That definitely, like the first couple rounds, you know what I mean? Just wasn't a whole lot going on. Definitely started slow. I think they probably split the first two rounds, neither really landing anything worth writing home about. But Cole K had those right-hand counters, and his defense was pretty sharp. It was definitely frustrating Devonchenko. And he had his jab going, and he was getting to the body a little bit. And late in the fourth is where he landed a really nice short left hand on Cole K. That was kind of like the biggest shot up into that point. I'd say the fifth round at that point was the most competitive. In the sixth round, Sergey? Is that what they're calling him now? I forgot. Anyway, he landed left hooks to the body repeatedly in that sixth round. Both guys exchanged left hooks in the seventh. Overhand rights were landed either on his head or the side of his head, side of Colquay's head. But then, man, the best work for Colquay was the last chunk of this fight. Sometime in the eighth round, I think it was early, he went off. He was going off. Now, Sergey made a run back and made it a close round. He landed some really good left hooks. But it seemed like the fight really started picking up sixth, seventh, eighth. Then the ninth, it went back to a snail's pace. Most of the tenth until like the last, I don't know, 20 seconds or something. Cloquet, landed several flush hands, just lunging with that right hand. And he hurt Sergey. At the beginning of the 11th, Sergey hit the canvas, but it was like a slip or a trip type thing. But the biggest shots, I think, were Cloquet, man. I mean, he had him late, hurt, leg weary, buzzed, something. You know, if he wasn't full-on hurt, he was buzzed. Now, Derevchenko actually turned up the volume to close out the fight pretty well. So, hey, this was a tight fight. 116-112, 116-112, 115-113 was the scorecards. Good fight, though. I thought it was a good fight. And I did think Derevchenko did enough to win. 7-5, 8-4, something like that. I think he was just more consistent throughout. But Cloquet, man, there's just something about Cloquet. You know, he comes on mid to late. Now Suleski, Derevchenko, and Andre, he's had competitive, pretty damn close fight, good fights. So that was a good fight, and it would have been really nice after that point if they would have went right to the main event. But yet, they went to a six-rounder, took some more time off, and then, like I said, I'm sitting there, it's like 12, it's a little after 12, and I'm thinking, wow, this fight's just happening now. Like, and I could just see people, like, losing their mind on Twitter, and rightfully so. It's late. Like I said, this there's no excuse for being this late. I understand that you got delayed by the fight, but that's the whole point. If it delayed you 40, 50 minutes, you got to take one of those fights out or at least get to the main event before. And you could tell the main event almost doubled, or not doubled, but it went up almost 100,000 viewers just for the main event. And the main event could have grown even further, but you got to let it have legs. But no, I didn't expect some sort of great rating. It was a poor rating. They're by far their worst of the year. It was under 200,000. I think it was 185,000 or something like that. I think it peaked at 268 or something like that. The baseball game before it though got destroyed too. I think that averaged 290 or something like that. So, you know, when you have three different cards going head-to-head or pretty close to it and taking people's attention. But really, when you have, what was it, four NBA playoff games that night, and obviously that night, you know, you're going against ABC, and this is actually when hockey is popping during the playoffs. A mainstream sports fan doesn't really pay attention to hockey that much, but they do when the playoffs start. Oh, and by the way, Tiger Woods had a lot of sporting fans' attentions too, so it was just bad. But once I saw the baseball lead-in with that average, I thought, okay, this isn't as bad as I thought. Anyway, it just sucks when you have a sold-out crowd, they're all ready for it, and they got to wait another 50 minutes, and it's going to be past midnight local time. It just didn't really add up. But anyway, that about wraps up the weekend. Like I said, not uneventful because Shields definitely made it eventful. Loma slaughtered in style. We had some things to talk about. A robbery. We had things to talk about, but like I said, it kind of gets all mushed in when you have so much competition going on. And right now, the next month, the NBA rules stuff. It really does. And at some point, though, after a month, there you won't see games on Saturday nights. Like the finals for the NBA, there's no Saturday night games in that. So that does help. You know, boxing has, you know, chunks of the year where they have to really shine and other times where they get overlooked, obviously. And January, February, by mid-February to somewhere in March, you have about a three-week month window, and you saw, you know, folks attack there as far as boxing folks and schedule. Then, obviously, the last 3 weeks were all college basketball, the NCAA, the Final Four, and now it swoops right into the NBA Finals. So for about a two-month gap there, especially on Saturday nights, it's going to be tough for boxing. But we start to pull out of it. We got some big fights coming up. And let's hope we get some more fights that are worthy of really sinking your teeth in and telling the casual fan about something the casual fan can actually get excited about. Now, before we get to this weekend, Crawford Khan, some of the undercard stuff, Shakur Stevenson taking on Christopher Diaz in his, you know, big step-up fight for him, see where he's at, Teofimo Lopez, and all his antics in and outside the ring, really starting to make a name for himself. He's back. Brandon Figueroa is back on the undercard in the step-up fight on the undercard of Garcia Granados. We'll talk a little bit about that. But before we get to that stuff, we're going to go over a variety of news. So, already talked about one of the news stories, obviously, with Big Baby Miller popping for a PED. And we've heard a variety of names out there. Char is one of them. We've heard Victor Ortiz. We've heard the Polish heavyweight, Kolonoski. Sounds like he said, I'm not going to be ready in that time. And that he has a plan, and his plan is not to take something where he's not going to be ready, supposedly. So There's a variety of names that have come out there, but we'll see. It's just it's disappointing because it's an interesting fight. Obviously, it's disappointing for Anthony Joshua fans. That's for damn sure. And Eddie's just got to be sick. I mean, he's got a bunch of tickets sold. And now he needs an opponent. But at least they have more than a month. You know what I mean? So that's like, what, 5 weeks, something like that, 6 weeks? So, you know, who knows? Will it be Char? Will it be Dillian White? Will it be Chisora? You never know. You really never know. I'm not going to speculate too much because right now they're in the holding pattern waiting for the beef sample. Oh, by the way, I don't think that he's released his big news, but Floyd Mayweather, let me check if he has. So Floyd Mayweather said he had an announcement to make. That's what he said. And he said something about like $100 million coming my way or some shit like, you know what I mean? And, I think it's just trolling. I mean, I don't think it's 100% trolling. I do think it'll be some sort of app he's pushing or something like that, or, you know, that type of thing. So it just, it's ironic that it comes on during the week of Top Rank and ESPN's first pay-per-view card for the deal. So I think it has more to do with that. He's not announcing he's fighting Pacquiao or anybody. But who knows? Maybe he will. I doubt it, though. It should be coming. It should be coming soon. Okay? It should be coming soon. That announcement. It'll be for some betting app or some sort of announcement with his fitness gyms or his strip club. Who knows? Who freaking knows? Speaking of the Armory, you know, overall, though, it was a good night at the Minneapolis Armory. Big buzzkill for the main event, obviously. But like I said, the crowd came out. And they already are booked now for July 13th on FS1 at the Armory. Jamal James returns. We don't know his opponent. I wonder if it'll be Luis Collazo, or did Collazo sign with Top Rank or have options on him? I'm not sure about that, but Jamal James returns July 13th. Hopefully they hook up a good card around him and give him a good, opponent as well. I think it's time for him to kind of step back up. So we'll see. We'll see how that works. Austin Trout and Terrell Gouchee are actually fighting May 25th, Crossroads fight on FS1. I don't mind that fight. You know, Trout is a guy who everybody kind of tries to write off, and then he'll have a good performance. He gave both Charlos pretty good fights. He did some damage to Jared Hurd until he got knocked out eventually. But Trout and Gouchee lost to Lara. It's got that desperation Crossroads fight feel to it. So it's decent. It's good. It adds to the list, the long list of mid-level fights this year that we're getting. And I think it's a quality mid-level fight, but I'm not going to sit there and, you know, pump it up too much. Speaking of fights, potentially, Gervonta Davis is returning late July in Baltimore, which is a good thing. It sounds like Gamboa might be the opponent. Now, Gamboa at 130 and 126 is better than Gamboa at 135, no doubt. But we just don't know where he's at. You know, he can give good fights to a lot of people around there. I mean, he proved it, you know, years ago. What was that, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago when he fought Crawford? But that's just one of those, you know, there's not a lot of names at the lightweight divisions or the featherweight, and just those lighter divisions. So that's why I didn't mind Gervonta taking on like an Abner Mars, because he's popular in the area and in the division. But Gamboa is just so past his prime. I mean, Marez was too, but you just don't know what Gamboa is capable of giving, whereas at least you knew Marez was going to bring everything he had. I mean, the guy had another surgery and he's coming back to fighting now. But there is some rumors that the fight after that might be against Leo Santa Cruz or Gary Russell Jr. Now, Gary Russell Jr. has been confirmed that he's coming back on the undercard of Deontay Wilder and Dominic Brazil. So in about a month, May 18th. For whatever reason, Leo Santa Cruz and Russell are not fighting this summer. I have no clue why. I don't know if they couldn't figure out the money. I don't know. It sounded like they were going to try to make it work. We heard Gary wants a fight. Well, dude, if you wanted a fight, you should have fought late last year or earlier this year. I'm sure Al could have put you on some undercard. I don't know. But maybe they're setting that up. You know, maybe they're – but the rumor has it either Leo Santa Cruz or or Gary Russell Jr. is going to get a fight with Tank Davis before long, sooner than later, basically. Jose Ramirez and Ray Beltran are in talks. I don't know how deep the talks are, but I would take that fight. I think it's a good fight for Ramirez where he's at. Mikey Garcia is going to fight an exhibition against Eric Morales. It's an event that's being promoted by his company, by their company, the Garcias. And I believe the undercards are going to be straight up fights. I don't think those are exhibitions either. I think those are straight up fights. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how I read it. But that's kind of weird. Like, so Mikey's going to stay busy, like get back in the camp for a little bit and fight an exhibition against Eric Morales. I really think it's just like a way to draw interest in your promotional company during an event. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, I don't know. I'd like to know soon, though, and the WBC needs to know soon, too. We got to figure out what Mikey's doing as far as maybe not who he's fighting next, per se, but, well, that. But the WBC, what is he going to do? Is he going to go to 35, or is he going to go to stay at 47 or be at 40? That we do not know. So, yeah, right now it's kind of a light, besides the PED scandal, it's kind of a light news podcast. Let me just double check to see if anything else is any kind of news broke. Not that I see. Some dude just tweeted, how can every time someone failed a VADA test or something, they say it's under review by commission? Getting everybody hopes up that the fight still has a chance. That's bullshit because the fight never really goes on. Name one person that tested positive and they still fought. Really, dude? This is actually Top Dog. I mean, that's, you can name some. You can definitely name some. I mean, Francisco Vargas. Morales. We were just talking about Morales. That's pretty funny. So, yeah. Let's see here. That's about it. That's about it for news. We don't have the big Floyd Mayweather announcement, but I think he's just trolling anyway. Let's get into these fights this weekend. Now, Terrence Crawford versus Amir Khan. This one's on pay-per-view. I am kind of bummed that they didn't give fans an option to see it in the movie theater. $20, $24 or something like that. $22, matters where you live and the taxes and whatnot. But it's a good option. It's a good option for fans, right? It's a good option for fans because the price point's 70-something. So if you're paying 70 or 75, you know, it's harder to get people to come over for fights they're not excited about. You know what I mean? I mean, Amir Khan, people do know Amir Khan, but in a weird way, it's kind of like they know him, but not for necessarily great things. Like Broner heading into the Pacquiao fight. People know Broner, but in the last chunk of years, he's had some good fights. The Granados fight was good. The Vargas fight was good, but he's had some stinkers too. And just him in general, people just kind of get sick of it. And then when you're asking them to pay, they said to go, I don't know. Now, he's been featured, you know, on U.S. TV for quite some time, Amir Khan has. Of late, he hasn't looked good, obviously. He fought Canelo. I almost said Caleb Truax. He fought Canelo and looked good through five rounds, then got starch. So, what was it, 400 or 500,000, somewhere in that range? I heard up to six. I think it was like 450. I don't remember. But the pay-per-view number did good. But people remember him, but they really remember him getting knocked the you-know-what out. And Khan just served as a better name than Liam Smith or some other guys.
You know what I mean?
So it was a successful pay-per-view, but that was a while ago now. That was almost 3 years ago. And he took 2 years off, something like that, came back, had that one fight. And then his last fight against Samuel Vargas, he looked like crap. He just didn't look good at all. And so it's not a ringing endorsement. And, you know, I understand a lot of fans and even Khan himself saying, well, I just can't get up for those Samuel Vargases. I can get up for this fight. And that's fair, but getting up and getting hurt or having to get up off the canvas, that's two different things. Like, not to go out there and start the guy and easily just rip him apart. That's one thing. I wasn't focused. It was a tougher fight than I thought. It is what it is. That's one thing. But to look like crap and to get hurt and to get knocked down, he didn't just get knocked down and that's it. You know, he got affected by several punches in that fight. So it's not a ringing endorsement. You know what I mean? However, if you look at Crawford's resume, the way I look at this fight, and this is like best case scenario, because we just don't know where Khan is. Can Khan bring hand speed and some outside skill in his jab and some quick combination punching and frustrate and make things difficult in the early goings for Crawford? Yeah. And I say it like difficult relatively speaking. I'm not saying it's going to be a super difficult fight, but just make him think about something. And, you know, I just don't know where he is, but back to what I was saying, the best case scenario, if you look at the Gamboa fight, now this is at a different weight class, but if you look at the Gamboa fight, like I said, Gamboa at 35 was proven before he even got to that fight that 35 wasn't the best weight for him. And he's a guy that canvassed a bunch of times. Now, I'd say there's a difference on how, you know, Khan was hitting the canvas, literally kissing the canvas at times, and how many times he got hurt badly in fights and ultimately stopped. Whereas Gamboa, many of those were just flash knockouts. Not to say he didn't get hurt by them, and obviously he got hurt enough in that Crawford fight, but it seems like to me the best case scenario that Khan is like the bigger version of Gamboa, where he's got the hand speed. I'd say power-wise, Gamboa had more power, but at 35, he didn't have a ton of power. At 26 was his best weight. 26 and 30, he had a lot more power. And whereas Khan is, you know, he started at 135 as well. He doesn't have a ton of power. He has pop at 147, but not a ton of power. But I do think some of the things that I was talking about, the jab, the pivot, certain things that takes a little while to catch up to what Khan can do. Once you do it and you plant that perfectly placed shot, which I do ultimately think will come, and it could come in the third or fourth round, it could come in the eighth round. But I think for about 3 to 5 rounds, somewhere in there, I do think that Khan will not only have success, but he'll win a round or two in there. I really do. However, at some point, there'll be, you know, there'll be a slight adjustment, whether it's, you know, pushing the southpaw a little bit more, excuse me, from Crawford, whether it's just timing him, because he is basic. Khan is basic in what he does, but you got to be able to catch up to it. You got to have be able to make adjustments. You got to be able to have the wit to catch up to it. But once you do, and I say wit, you know, Samuel Vargas and wit, not to say him as an individual, but as a fighter, doesn't really stand out. So I'm saying best case scenario that this fight plays out a little like Gamboa and Crawford. Now, I'm not saying Crawford hurt Gamboa. I'm sorry. Well, he did do that. But Gamboa literally hurt Crawford. I don't know if Crawford's going to get hurt in this fight. It's been a while. He probably hasn't been hurt since Beltran. But, like, hurt. But I do see this fight playing out to be an interesting style matchup, chess. It'll be interesting to see if Crawford is going to oblige and sit there in the ring and try to outskill him for a while, which I think ultimately will definitely work, but I think he'll get hit some in the process. Or will he try to, once he lands that big shot, will he try to close the show a little bit more than he normally does? Who knows? And that's where, you know, he's faced some long, lanky guys, no doubt about it. But Khan's style, like I said, with some of his length, I mean, Crawford's actually a longer guy. He has longer arms. But if you're coming forward, then it doesn't matter as much. So I'd say we're going to see a real patient Crawford for a while. He's going to find his way. And then, like I said, time him. And once he times him, then I think it's all, you know, all over. I really do. But, you know, for his resume, this is probably, besides Gamboa, this is probably the most skillful guy he's faced. Now, you could say Postol, maybe. Postol won the first round and then didn't win a round after that. Because Postol needs a guy to come at you, right? But it's not like Khan is just this guy that goes out and comes at you either. You know, he needs a certain type of style to make himself look good. Khan, the reason why I don't give him much of a chance in general, it's because he just kind of looks past it. And that 2 years off, I mean, he had already taken some time off. He had a year gap from, I believe, the Algeria fight. By the way, Algeria, that was like a 8-4, 7-5 fight, 8-4 fight, good fight. But Algeria hurt him with an overhand right. That's what it's going to be, in my opinion. Could be a left hook right hand, but I think that overhand right is going to find a home. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe the left hook. Obviously, Danny Garcia, you know, hurt Khan with the left hook, and that was the start to beginning. So I do like Crawford, and I do think he'll stop him somewhere, like a technical stoppage. I'm not saying he can't knock him out, but I feel like it's going to be a TKO somewhere mid to late. But after five rounds or something like that, I will not be shocked to say this is a good, tight fight, dude. You know, I wouldn't be shocked. I just don't know what is left in Khan right now. I just don't know. Based off his last fight, it is tough to decipher. But I got Crawford winning by technical stoppage. I think Shakur Stevenson will beat Christopher Diaz. But this is a good step-up fight for him. Christopher Diaz has at least been in the ring with some decent guys, decent vets. He only has one loss. He has a bunch of fights as a professional. So I like this step up for Shakur Stevenson. We're going to find out what happens with him legally, you know, whether he settles, whether he gets in trouble. I have no clue. Whether he cops a plea, I have no clue. I have no clue what's going to happen there. Teofimo Lopez takes on somebody that he should pretty much handle. The guy's not a bum that he's fighting, no doubt about it. He's pretty good. You never know. Maybe Teofimo's, you know, overlooking him. but I think that it's just nice to see Teofimo back, and you know, hopefully he gets another highlight reel knockout. But we'll see. Maybe this guy, you know, I've seen highlights of this guy. I want to say I've seen one fight, or maybe I've seen chunks of that fight, but I don't know a ton about the guy he's fighting. As far as the Garcia Granados, Brandon Figueroa, the Fox card, Brandon Figueroa is in a step-up fight. Could be interesting. Who else is on that card? Why can't I remember? Who's the co-feature? Some reason I just can't remember the co-feature. Anyway, I'll figure it out in a little bit. Garcia Granados. Now, Garcia's a favorite, you know, rightfully so. Oh, Andy Ruiz is taking on Dimitrenko. He, you know, he's kind of been on the outs for a little bit. So we'll see if he can. This is kind of like a shake it off. You know, Dimitrenko looked pretty good last summer. Was that August? Pretty good. Some people thought he maybe should have won the fight. But the guy he was fighting recently got stopped in the 12th round by Rivas, actually. So, who else? Oh, you know, the Cotto and Rosario, that has a potential to be interesting, as does Espinoza and Casimura. Oh, it's for a WBO interim bantamweight title. I didn't know that. And also DAZN, David Allen, Lucas Brown, Chisora Gashi. I don't know that guy. Josh Kelly and I don't know the guy Josh Kelly's taking on. Connor Benn, he's not taking on anyone at this point. So my guess is it's probably, if it's a TBA right now, it's probably not going to be that good of a fight. But who knows? You never know. On to Garcia Granados. And by the way, like I said earlier, this fight is going to start at, or the card is going to start at 7 o'clock, which is 8 o'clock Eastern. I'm talking 7 Central. And the main, or the first cast for the pay-per-view starts at 8. So you have an hour in change, you know, differential. So as far as Crawford and Khan, there's a good chance that, or there's a great chance that Garcia and Granados, you know, it'll probably be like from 7 to 9 Central Time will probably be the thick of that card. And then the main event will probably be from like 9 to 10, somewhere in that range. Maybe trickling over into 9, maybe a little short. I don't know. Kind of matters, obviously, how the other card plays out. But Garcia Granados will be done before Crawford and Khan. Now, the Shakur Stevenson, Christopher Diaz, that's one that if you rent the pay-per-view, you're probably going to watch that fight and watch Garcia Granados, you know, on DVR. But as far as that night goes, it actually works out pretty good. May 11th, ESPN and Fox go head-to-head. That's another one of those that time the other card starts, you know, the main events won't go head-to-head. It'll be more like, you know, like I said earlier, 4 or 5 hours of boxing that you can enjoy and not have to be going on at the fight you want to see at the exact same time. But anyway, let me get to this Garcia Granados. Now, Danny Garcia is coming off a loss last September to Sean Porter. So this is a good opponent for him. It's a good fight to get back, but I don't call it a tune-up. You know what I mean? I don't call it – you can say stay busy if you want. That's cool. But as far as getting back from a loss, stay busy, whatever you want to call it, Granados represents a very good opponent at this juncture where he's at right now. Not necessarily in his career, but like I said, he's looking to build to another big fight. But Granados, some of the things he can do on the outside with activity, damn good fighter, man. And you saw it with Broner, who has problems cutting off the ring and letting his hands go. You know, you saw it with Porter. I mean, if Garcia comes forward, Mauricio Herrera on the outside and Lamont Peters on the outside. Remember, Lamont didn't really show us a lot of outside activity or work. You know, he didn't really fight on the outside much as a pro. he liked to take it on the inside, dig into the body, and you know, obviously some of that was his downfall. But when he did show skills, he had some pretty good skills. And if you look at the activity rate, wasn't high enough, I think, to beat Danny at the place. But he surprised a lot of people on that night. Mauricio Herrera, I already mentioned. Like, Granados, if he fights smart with that punch rate, he can do some damage here, dude. And if he uses movement with activity, and he's not trying to go too much with the activity and open up and get caught by one of those patent left hooks and get timed, this could be a good-ass fight, dude. This kind of reminds me of like an 8-4 fight, 7-5 hard, you know, hard-earned victory. And so I'm okay with this on Fox. I actually like this fight. I think if you're going to put a name like Danny Garcia on Fox, you might as well put him in there with somebody game. And, you know, Granados fought on the undercard of a pretty well-rated Wilder card. He also fought in the main event a couple years back that I think was the biggest rated show that year on Showtime. So the guys, the hardcore fan, and even that common fan, not the casual, maybe not the common, but even that, you know, fairly active, I watch a couple of fights a month fan, may have heard of this guy. And by the way, there is going to be some people from Chicago in there. But the you know, the Mexican fan base in L.A. will come out to support him too. We obviously have a Puerto Rican and a Mexican going head-to-head. Like I said, on the other card, Brandon Figueroa steps up against a veteran guy. I'm actually eagerly anticipating that fight. It's for a, you know, it's for a trinket or whatever, but I want to see where Figueroa is. I think stepping him up. I like that Shakur Stevenson and Figueroa are in step-up fights, but I have Garcia winning. Should I go majority or unanimous? And Granados has had a long – another thing about Granados, he's had a full camp. And a guy like Granados, and let's be honest, the majority of boxing – has to take fights when they're not 100% ready. Well, this announcement was, what, November? I mean, he's had ample time to be ready. So I'm going to go majority decision in an entertaining fight, a fun fight to watch, but maybe a tougher fight than people give it credit for. And like I said, this thing should be all done before Crawford and Kong. So I'm going to go Garcia, majority decision in a tough fought, 7-5, 8-4, 8-4 win, something like that. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. Enjoy the fights. Like I said, Crawford Kong on pay-per-view. I don't know if you're game for it. Like I said, I do wish they would give that movie theater option. Discounted rate. Not only that, but just the ads. Those couple of weeks before the fight happens, to have those, you know, those trailers run in a movie theater to touch, you know, part of the fan base, or not even part of the fan base. Obviously, most of it's not the mainstream sports fan or just mainstream person that walks into a theater and says, "Oh, that's cool. They're having it here." Not that they'd even watch it in the theater per se, but it's word of mouth. You know what I mean? So I think it's good for the advertisement. It helps the show. It helps produce numbers. But I also think it helps the fan. It gives the fan a cheaper option. So kind of sucks, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I understand if people say, hey, I buy all the pay-per-views. I'm going to support this one. At least they put on some interesting, you know, if you look at the fight card down low, and actually ESPN has a prelims on too, by the way. And Felix Verdejo against Brandon Vasquez. They have some interesting undercard fights. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Enjoy the fight weekend. After this weekend, man, we're hitting the pace of important fights. Canelo Jacobs. Rung Vasai Estrada 2. We got some fights coming up. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, enjoy the fights. Have a safe weekend. I'll talk to you next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the holdback, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, I made it. That will show you it's this. So I'm going to give any dollar worth.